What's up, Wisconsin? You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I am so excited for this next half hour of radio, as well as the bottom half of the hour, because at least for these 30 minutes, I am joined by my good friend, former colleague, County Board Supervisor Steve Taylor, my conservative buddy, one of my conservative buddies.
Yes.
I've got a bunch of them.
Right.
Steve, we've had such a fun time working together for many years.
We have.
At the county.
When did you start?
I started January 3rd, 2017.
Yeah. So I've known you since then.
Yeah.
I was gone for 4 years, but for a few years, but then now I'm back.
You're back.
And now you're gone again. So
yeah.
That's not good.
Well, we can kibitz on the radio. How about that?
We can. I look forward to it.
Yeah.
I do.
One of the things that I wanted to share with people is that in the course of us working together, we've had the opportunity at various times where there have been difficult issues and debates between the board and the executive, debates within the board about all kinds of things. And one of the things that I always enjoyed about working with you, Steve, was the fact that you and I could separate our personal respect for one another and the fun that we can have on a golf course.
Yes.
From sometimes the tough business of government work.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your approach to being a supervisor and elected office and how you deal with differences of opinion when it comes to your job.
Well, you know, the county board's a different makeup. You know, I live in Franklin, and that's a conservative community, and the board is 18 members, and there's three conservatives and 15 non-conservatives, and we go from socialist to like the regular blue dog Democrats, so and everywhere in between. And so you have to kind of operate differently at the county level than you could at the local level. And I think it's about relationship building, which is what I think I've tried to do the whole time I've been there. You know, I realized if I went downtown when I first got elected in 2012, if I went down there and acted like previous conservatives, constantly trying to embarrass my colleagues and grandstand and point out every flaw that they make, I'm not going to get anything done.
Yeah.
But if I build relationships and they don't dislike me, then I'll be able to accomplish things for my community, which I was very successful in the first go around, the first 6 years I was there. And some of those relationships still exist today. And so I think it's about trying to find common ground, which is not very common nowadays.
No kidding.
Everything's very divisive. Everything is, you know, wins and losses. And I think you still have to try to get to compromise, which, you know, some on the right don't like that I talk like this. You know,
yeah.
They call me a rhino. and it is what it is, right?
Well, I think that's the challenge, right? Sort of the John McCain's of the world, right? The Mitt Romney's of the world that said, I can disagree with my colleagues from across the aisle, but my job is to get things done. And that means at time compromising, and the ability to compromise that you hear from most of the most successful elected officials that I've ever read about or talked to is that those compromises have to be built on mutual respect and trust.
Well, I'm a big Bush 41 guy. I mean, if you've been in my office, you would see the portraits and the pictures and that. But I also a huge, huge fan of Governor Thompson.
Yep.
I mean, he got 64% the last time he ran. He had, you know, a legislature that was, he was in the minority, the Republicans were in the minority. And he got a lot of things done, and it's still going to be like the most. He'll be the last governor that gets those types of percentages,
of
you know, in the state. And he had to work across the aisle, and you shouldn't be ashamed to do that. But yet, we're vilified when we do.
Yeah, it's a real conundrum. I think more so for conservatives, but there's also some smatterings of that on the left as well. And I think, you know, this does not bode well for getting things done in government.
Right.
I don't think it bodes well for smart policy debates either, right? Because if you're just screaming to what I call the tails of the bell curve or yelling to the tails of the bell curve, you're not actually getting anything done. You're engaging in what I like to call performative politics. We're going to talk about more about that in just a second, because I know you've got some pretty strong thoughts on that, but I thought we could share a little story with our listeners, Steve.
Sure, I love stories.
Because we have a bunch of them.
We do.
One of my favorite stories is my office had issued an opinion about historical designations. And we were talking about the domes in Milwaukee, which is a much debated. The issue about the domes has been going on for like nearly 20 years about what to do about the domes, whether to get historical designation. And my office had tried to do some outreach to the state historical preservation officer. We tried to do as much research as we can about what it means. And basically my office came out and said, listen, if the domes receive a historical designation, basically the state is going to have a say over the fate of the domes.
Right.
And I got a whole bunch of feedback from preservationists, from the City of Milwaukee Historical Preservation Commission, and said, the state law doesn't say that anywhere. The state actually can't step in and veto Milwaukee's plans, the Milwaukee County's plans for anything. But I said, oh, but the statute doesn't actually say it can't either. Right. And it says we have to submit these plans to the state agency, and then there's this review process. And to me, that's state involvement. You took issue with that. You wanted to say, and we had this vigorous discussion in a committee meeting,
right,
where you were pointing out what you believed was an error. Can you tell folks a little bit about that back and forth and what was going on there and how people misread what we were doing there together in that meeting?
Well, you know, it was, I think the previous, we made a decision based on your kind of opinion. And then it turned out that that opinion wasn't so correct. And that got me hot because, you know, and that caused some issues and, you know, some back and forth shooting shots and bows and arrows at each other a little bit, which that's how I operate. Yep. I mean, I'm, you know, I'm not, I don't wear kids gloves when I'm in board meetings and that, and don't usually pull a punch. And, but you took it and you shot it like, you know, right back at me, you know, and, you know, basically said, sometimes we get them wrong, you know, and we had, that was the best information we had at the time. And, you know, like I said, it was irritating because like I said, I think the board, we made a decision based on that, but at the end of the day, you know, that's what we were told. And then we ended up adjusting and pivoting and moving forward after that. But what's funny was the after effects was people thought that you and I were like enemies.
Mortal enemies. Yeah. It was very interesting to me. We had what you had a viewpoint that our advice had been incorrect. Mm-hmm. I frankly, to this day, I still disagree with the incorrectness of it because the state would be involved. I thought, and I did give the best advice we could at the time. But I was also very candid. We've got better information now. And so we issued this follow-up opinion, and you and I had what I would call a very, totally candid, understandable back and forth.
Right.
And one of the things that I respect about you, Steve, is you don't speak in riddles and rhymes and you don't talk around stuff.
No.
When you say you don't, you know, there's no kid gloves, I just like to say you speak directly.
Mm-hmm.
I do too. And we had this moment of exchange where we were speaking very directly with one another. And it was great. I mean, you were able to say to me, I disagree, and you screwed this up. And I said, no, I don't think so. And we went back. And there was my favorite moment from that exchange that I remember very fondly was you said, well, listen, if we need to get some other lawyers in here and, you know, get some better advice. And I smiled at you and I said, you go ahead and do that
because
you can find a lawyer to say about just damn well near anything.
Right.
I'll put my office and my advice up against anybody else you can hire. And if you all want my resignation, I'll give it.
Right.
And that clarity of you saying, Maggie, be sure you get it right. I disagree with how you did this. And me saying, okay, I get your perspective. I disagree, but of course I serve you and I think we do outstanding work. I thought that was exactly what it should be, right?
Totally what it should be. And what we're talking about, maybe a certain supervisors, is the way my fear was if what you said we feel was incorrect, then certain ones will use anything against the board. Like, well, there's this possibility, or you were wrong here. How could you be right now?
Yes.
And we have colleagues, one in particular that does that all the time, that twists things around and will use that, we have new information now. Well, she was wrong. Well, if she was wrong then she could be wrong now. And they just like want to have blinders on.
Yep.
And
no, you asked the important question, which was how, if you got this wrong, and again, I disagree that we had gotten it, but if you get this wrong, how do we know that we can rely? And I said, because that's our record, because you can trust me, and I'll always be willing to stand up, and I'll put my record as corp counsel up against anybody else's, right? I loved the fact that we could have that discussion.
Well, you know, I think, you know, in this line of work, you know, we have different department heads that they're, you know, timid or they're afraid to challenge elected officials because of, you know, repercussion. And
yeah,
and I'd rather have someone challenge, you know, us back, you know, in a respectful way, because it was respectful between you and I. And I think, but, you know, we're the ones that put our name on the ballot. We're the ones that are elected, and we demand answers and we deserve them. And if we have issues and we go butt heads, we butt heads. But, you know, you can have a respectful debate.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And we were totally fine. I think we met later that afternoon. Like,
I don't even remember what was going on, but we were hanging out.
Excellent.
And people were, oh, you and Steve are fighting. I was like, no, we're not. That went well. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
And I love that about you, Steve. I always have a great amount of respect. And the fact that you don't mete out what I would call personal grudges, right? You're not keeping a tick list of, oh, we had this disagreement and now I'm going to take every opportunity I can to burn Maggie.
Right.
Again, trying to get things done. We're coming up on a couple of important messages here. We're going to have to take a quick little breather, but I wanted to cue this up. We'll come back and talk about it a little bit more. Is when we talk, when I talk about performative politics, I'm not talking about the theater of politics. Every elected official and folks, even like myself, who wasn't elected but had a public facing role, we have to understand that there are, the public is listening to us, and we need to make sure that folks can be engaged and that they've got understanding footholds, right? That's a bit of the political theater of the thing. But performative politics to me is when someone basically knowing that what they're proposing or the argument that they're making is never going to go anywhere or actually will harm or hurt, and they do it anyways simply because they know it's going to get headlines, it's going to get them more publicity, or because they want to exert power simply for the sake of exerting power. That's what I call performative politics. I know you've got some thoughts on
that,
Steve.
I do.
I can't wait to hear them. And here's my good news for all the civic media listeners out there. Steve, good friend of mine, he's going to be joining me on the regular here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We're going to have a little back and forth about the issues du jour from a conservative and a more centrist, slight left of center perspective. But this afternoon, a little bit more on performative politics when we come back. If you got a question for Steve or I, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Keep it locked, everybody. More when we come back.
You're listening to The Shaw, W-A-U-K, Waukesha's home for Matt and Aaron.
Superstar, where you from, how's it going? I know you got a clue what you're doing. You can play brand new to all.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to a superstar. His name is Steve Taylor. He's a Milwaukee County Board of Supervisor. You took a little hiatus, came on back.
Well, the former county executive spent $150,000 to get rid of me back in 2018. So,
which is, you know, if you don't know, it's a hell of a lot.
It's a hell of a lot of money, and so it wasn't. It was a forced exit. I didn't think I was ever going to come back, but then, you know, redistricting occurred, and I was involved in the redistricting process because that was my ordinance change back in 2016
to bring on an independent redistricting
committee. The board was not being as independent as they should have been, and they end up drawing a district with me all by myself. So they got what they asked for.
Yep.
You know, they were actually asking me to come back. So I'm very happy to represent all of Oak Creek and a nice chunk of Franklin, so where I live.
So, well, thanks so much for joining today and this afternoon, Steve. And thank you for agreeing to come on and be what I would consider sort of the more traditional conservative voice. And we'll touch on some issues going forward. But today I wanted to focus again on your experience as a supervisor. I define performative politics. It's basically like self-congratulatory grandstanding for no purpose or potentially that will result in harm.
Yeah.
You've got some viewpoints on this. In fact, you think some of your colleagues engage in this pretty much on the regular.
Listen,
do you think my definition works? Let me ask you that.
Oh, I think it totally works.
And what do you think is motivating? Is it just ego?
It has to be ego and self-gratification, without a doubt. I mean,
I don't even understand it, because if we take a couple of the people that we both know,
yeah,
the issues that they grandstand about don't go anywhere.
No.
They don't get any results. I don't understand it. Like, it's just to see the name in the newspaper, I would assume.
I have no idea. I mean, so can I name?
You can say whatever you'd like. Right.
So Supervisor Ryan Clancy, who's also a state representative, who I don't know how my colleagues have served with him for a total of 4 years. I can't even get through the two. I mean, I can't wait to the last meeting on the 21st. I've never seen someone bring in so much legislation that is terrible, that's almost unanimously defeated. I mean, during the budget, you know, dozens of amendments to gut the sheriff's department go nowhere. But what's harmful is like serious issues that we face that maybe shouldn't even before the county: immigration, abortion, and now this ceasefire, this Palestine ceasefire, you know, the Middle East. It's getting people all worked up. People are getting hurt by this. And he's supposed to be the moral conscience of Milwaukee County.
And just so for people who may be newbies, what Steve is referring to are resolutions that are introduced. He mentioned three specifically introduced by current Milwaukee County Board Supervisor Ryan Clancy, also State Representative Ryan Clancy at Milwaukee County, that Milwaukee County has absolutely no power, no authority, and that no one is listening to. It is merely a symbolic resolution. Those include resolutions relating to immigration policy, the war, the attack of Hamas on Israel and what is happening in Gaza currently, as well as abortion. These things are beyond the county's control. And obviously, each of those three issues are incredibly emotionally charged.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is what, Steve, when these resolutions come up for debate?
Well, I mean, it bogs down county government to begin with. There's issues, and it becomes a very divisive body. I mean, this whole, like, literally we had intergovernmental on Monday night. It was over 4 hours of citizen input and very passionate. And we have no authority over this issue at all. And we're getting criticized for, like, I voted to not support what was before us. There's going to be a substitute in a couple weeks that I will support. And of course, my emails blow up. People are calling me things that, you know, I'm not going to repeat on the air. And that's unfortunate. And it's because of this drive to get attention on issues when we should be focusing on the business of the county. And unfortunately, these issues, like I said, are very emotional. Like I said, abortion, immigration, now this ceasefire. I mean, it's tragic. It's inhumane what's going on there. But what does Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors have to do with a federal issue?
Yeah. And that's, you know, this invective has spread. You see it happening in different ways and shapes and forms, but basically in a lot of local governments, more than I had ever experienced. I'm a native Milwaukee, and I didn't see the Milwaukee Common Council taking up foreign policy issues.
No.
You know, they weren't telling Mr. Reagan when he was president to tell Mr. Gorbachev to tear down this wall.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that wasn't part of what. So these jurisdictional questions, again, asking supervisors or asking aldermen or local village board trustees to focus on village business is extraordinarily important. And I think also these symbolic resolutions, not only on these emotionally charged and divisive issues, which then end up in 4-hour meetings with staff there and you're not debating very difficult actual issues that
right.
Milwaukee County has jurisdiction over. Milwaukee County supervisors, City of Milwaukee aldermen, Franklin aldermen, those are nonpartisan seats.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you have this extraordinarily emotional and partisan debate happening. As most of it, and I make this argument all the time, filling potholes ain't partisan. Having good parks ain't partisan, right? Like, all those things that local government's supposed to be attending to. My question, when I was sitting there in those 4-hour meetings, 8-hour meetings, 10-hour meetings, was, what aren't we getting done that we
right.
should be getting done?
What it does is, you know, the real issues of the county, the ones that we are, you know, elected to deal with on a monthly basis, are being pushed off to the side for these high-charged debates. I mean, we have homeless people in this community. You know, we have seniors that are being, you know, taxed out of their homes. We have, you know, there's referendum questions that have nothing to do with the county board that are coming up, but with the school district. I mean, there are things that are going on in this community, and we're focusing on issues that are, you know, on the halfway around the world. And yet we have residents in Milwaukee County that have family members in Gaza.
Yeah.
That and people they know have died.
Yep.
And why are we torturing these people by having this debate, putting them through this, when even if we adopt something in 2 weeks, what is that doing at the end of the day?
Yeah.
And so that's frustrating.
I just want to emphasize something that you said there. For residents and folks that may pay attention to these resolutions and are frankly emotionally hurt, riled up, relive trauma. And this is my words, I don't want to put any in your mouth, Steve. It is extraordinarily not only a waste of time and beside the point and not the business of county government. And not only is it performative politics in its worst form, it is abusive. It is exploitative of these people. And the politicians that engage in this do so with such vigor, such glee, that the harm that they're causing, the emotional trauma that they're causing to these people, to me, then besets or eclipses their entire point.
Mm-hmm.
Disgusting.
It becomes about them.
Yes.
And it's clear. And when I have colleagues on the left and the right that really are disgusted by this supervisor's actions, Supervisor Clancy's actions, you know it's bad. You know it's bad.
Steve, I can't wait to have you back again. I think we've got it queued up in another couple of weeks.
Yeah, we do.
I will make sure that everybody listening to Civic Media knows about it so they can come in and listen. We'll talk about much more. Maybe we'll talk about those raises for the Register of Deeds,
yes,
Treasurer, and County Clerk.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah, you're
pleasure
welcome.
To see you.
You too.
Everybody, I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with more in just a moment. 855-75-CIVIC. Get it in for the last half hour of the Maggie Dawn Show. And don't forget, hope coming your way before the end of the show. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I promised you hope before the end of the hour, and I will certainly give it to you. But before we get there, I am so excited to have with me one of the most critical members of the Fourth Estate of the Press that has covered Milwaukee County for nearly 40 years, truly knows all of the things that have happened in the county. Journalist for Urban Milwaukee, author of Murphy's Law, Bruce Murphy. Bruce, thanks so much for making time today. It's a real pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to talk to you. Yesterday, I spent a little bit of time talking about three constitutional officer positions that exist in every county in the state of Wisconsin, but that many insiders who know a lot about county government consider pretty archaic. And those are the Register of Deeds, the County Clerk, and the County Treasurer. And there have been debates that have been going on about eliminating the state treasurer, even the City of Milwaukee treasurer. And there have been resolutions introduced in Milwaukee County to try to deal with or ask the state to remove these positions at Milwaukee County. And yet, despite this lengthy history, the county is considering raising the salaries from $91,000. The original resolution was about a 10% raise, but apparently yesterday during a personnel committee hearing, the raise that's now being contemplated for these three archaic question mark constitutional officer positions, elected positions in Milwaukee County, is now upwards north of a 20% raise, which they will then get a COLA bump for, which will make it about a 22% raise. I don't know anybody in county government that's ever gotten a 22% raise. Bruce, you really shared some important historical facts with those that read your column, Murphy's Law, on urbanmilwaukee.com. Share with our listeners here on the Civic Media Radio Network a little bit about these positions and a little bit of the history here.
So these constitutional officers, they were created as under the state constitution in 1848. And I suspect for a long time, they probably had some significance. But I think over time, what happened is, the county board creates different staff and the county executive. And I think eventually most of what they were doing was done by other offices. And by the 1980s, there was a lot of evidence that these three offices were doing very little. The most classic example is you had a former alderman, Kevin O'Connor, who then became a bank executive. He ran for county treasurer, took the office, and resigned after a few months, announcing that it took all of 45 minutes a day to do the duties of that office. And since that time, I think that, you know, it just so made it clear how ridiculous this was. You had, on several occasions, the county board voted to get rid of these three positions, but they needed to get enabling legislation from the state legislature. And a lot of counties saw this as a bad precedent. They didn't want to get rid of their own county constitutional offices. And so the legislature never gave approval.
And why was it that why were other counties worried about getting rid of these positions?
Because I think that some of these counties are much smaller. And so maybe those offices actually have some value, but I think also a lot of times you have loyalties built up to the people who have those positions and you don't want to get rid of them. And sometimes maybe they're part of the whole party structure in that county.
If I can, again, this is not Bruce's opinion, this is only mine. And that is that the personalities and the party, you know, in Milwaukee County, these positions are largely sort of vetted and go through Milwaukee County's Democratic Party. And these folks that tend to get elected to these positions are typically very well connected. In other words, I would call them in many ways sort of political gadflies within the local parties. And that's true, I think, in a more acute or pronounced form in smaller county jurisdictions. But in Milwaukee County, each of these three offices have big staffs, a lot of people that are logging a lot of hours doing the actual work.
Yes. And as I say, in the late 80s, early, actually, this was about 20 years ago, I had Dorothy Dean, who was then serving as Register of Deeds, former county board member, who told me, you know, all three of these offices could be combined into one. There's so little work to be done.
So what are these guys doing? What are they doing all day?
Well, honestly, the Tom Zablocki, who served in the 80s, was apparently known for his stamp collection. you had Paul McCormick, who succeeded him, who was said to favor crossword puzzles. And then Tom Moe played a lot of golf. I mean, these are just sinecures for a lot of times for has-been politicians who, toward the end of their careers, get this really high-paying job that does very little.
Yeah, I'm not speaking about any of these individuals specifically. I worked with them when I was corporation counsel at the county, but I think the question has to be asked, if you're demanding or getting a raise upwards of 20%, how does the public actually ascertain what work you're doing? Is there any way for the public to know that?
I don't think there is. And of course, there's less press today and less oversight of some of this stuff. So that's an issue. But to me, it was when these raises were just proposed in the last few weeks. I was stunned because I thought, is there no one on the county board who knows the history? You know, the fact that the county board had tried to get rid of these positions for years and the fact that it's well known that these positions really involve very few duties. The thing that struck me is that there was Department of Human Resources did this report recommending this raise. There was no analysis of the actual duties of these officers.
And one of the things that we know now is with all the security measures, both from an IT security perspective and also the security measures surrounding the courthouse, it's actually known or knowable when people are swiping into the building, when they are on their county computer. It would seem to me a perfectly reasonable question to be asked is, okay, how much are you actually working? How much are, you know, if you're in a committee hearing, people know that because you're appearing there. Okay, we can see that. otherwise, like, how much time are you actually on your county computer doing county work? When are you in the building? You made reference in your article. Again, this is Bruce Murphy, author of Murphy's Law in Urban Milwaukee. You can find that at urbanmilwaukee.com or just Google Bruce Murphy. You made mention of the fact that back in the day, the Fourth Estate members of the local media effectively like staked out the courthouse to find out how much time one of these officers was spending in the building.
Yes, and that was when it began to be clear that these offices, you know, were not very taxing positions. This recent Department of Human Resources report claimed it was doing a market rate analysis of salaries, and that's how they decided these raises were needed. It's not a market analysis when you're talking about public positions. I mean, these are not positions that are in competition with the private sector. They're not trying to hire away from the private sector to fill these positions. These are just political positions which get salaries as much as the community or the political officials there decide is warranted. It has nothing to do with, there's no real market for these positions.
To put the point really plainly, you raise your hand and you run to be the Register of Deeds, treasurer, or county clerk. If you don't like the salary, don't raise your hand and run for the job. Again, we're not trying to steal people away from the private sector because, oh, by the way, there's not really a private sector equivalent for any of these jobs because a corporation has a CFO. And with the advances in technology, as well as the fact that at least in Milwaukee County, you have folks on staff and usually the second in commands in these offices that have extensive experience, perhaps professional credentials that exceed that of their boss. So again, I you know, when you're an elected official, you get all kinds of personal publicity. You get your name in the paper. You get to do all these things. You get to see your name at the top of the letterhead. And you got people that do the work for you. Again, a 20% raise over $91,000, especially in a county like Milwaukee, where we have faced workforce retention issues largely related to salary, especially in your most technical jobs. That seems a stretch for me.
And, you know, they're talking about raising a salary that is already $94,000. I mean, that's more than the lieutenant governor of the state makes. It's more than the state treasurer makes. It's more than most political elected officials in the state earn. It just makes no sense to me. And there's no shortage of people wanting to run for these positions. So why is the higher salary needed?
Yeah, it's interesting. And again, I don't mean to besmirch any of the work of the current incumbents in these positions. It is a reflection of where we are from a technological perspective and a staffing perspective, especially given the fact that Milwaukee County has struggled fiscally for so many years. Seems to certainly be a stretch. Now, Bruce, before we run out of time here, what I wanted to do was be sure to give you a shout out for your incredibly insightful and detailed coverage dating back to some of the issues related to the county's pension for many years. We saw the sales tax get passed this year. It looks like that is going to buoy the county's pension. But the interesting thing, I think, is that this kind of a raise can't be viewed in isolation. Not only is the history surrounding these three positions important, but the history surrounding how compensation as well as retirement and other benefits was managed within the county is also essentially important. Looking back, what do you think, if anything, that history relating to the county's pension and these million-dollar-plus backdrops for many high-level officials in Milwaukee County, what should that be saying to current county board supervisors?
Well, I think that there is a link between all of that, and that is that there's always been, and maybe it's not as bad as it was back when I wrote about the pension, but county cronyism, where people are looking to cash in and where they support each other. And the pension plan was passed, back in 2001 because there was such a fixation by county officials on their pension benefits and getting more. And when you have that kind of mentality of cronyism and trying to cash in, then the fact that some county constitutional officers make a pretty good salary and don't do very much for it is just sort of water under the dam. It doesn't really matter because there's such a fixation on everybody cashing in. I should say, I don't think the county is as bad as it was 20 years ago. I think there were things learned from the county pension scandal. But this current situation of handing out these big raises to me is just part of that same problem.
Yeah, I think the county is in much better shape, but we have to learn from the past or we are doomed to repeat it. When you talk about cronyism, I think it's worthy to mention that the person that introduced the amendment to increase the raise from an 11% raise to nearly a 20% raise is fairly close with at least one of the people that he proposes to give the raise to and that they served together previously, I believe, in the state legislature. Puts a fine point on the question of cronyism at the county. I've certainly been proud to serve and proud to know that there are folks like you out there, Bruce, that's keeping everybody honest. My thanks to you, sir, for your time this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's do it again soon. You've been listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Come back. I'm going to give you hope after this Super Tuesday. At least Donald Trump thinks it was a Super Tuesday. There is hope in this cloud. There is a silver lining. I'm going to give it to you after these important messages here on The Maggie Dawn Show. Join us for our last segment, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Maggie Dawn Show. We've got our last segment of the day. Get your licks and kicks in 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. My thanks to Bruce Murphy, author of Murphy's Law on UrbanMilwaukee.com, a Milwaukee County historian. He knows where all the bodies are buried. My thanks to Supervisor Steve Taylor for joining me, as well as Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, former City of Milwaukee Health Commissioner. Let's go to the phones. We've had some very patient listeners. David from San Francisco, what say you?
Well, thanks, Maggie. Yeah, I've got a well-groomed beard by waiting so patiently.
Thank you, David.
I was interested in two guests ago, the elected official that you had there. I call a lot of radio talk shows trying to convince the MAGA types to change their tune. And what I try to do is show that they're being tricked into joining the corporate state. And, you know, the corporate state is the other name for fascism, where the corporations basically tell America or they tell a country what to do. And that you really have no choice in the matter. You, boss man says so, you better do it. And, you know, a democracy, of course, is when we the people decide how to run our own lives and we don't need no stinking king. And so what I've been trying to do with that is show how the way we got rid of a king was to come up with the social contract. That if the Bible, for example, says that the king is supposed to look out for look out for his flock, every sparrow that falls, the corporate state doesn't need to do that.
Right.
And so the idea that we're being tricked into joining up with the corporate state or instituting a corporate state is a really dangerous proposition when you've got, you know, all of the inventors of the world coming up with fantastic technology which can poison the world or lay waste to it. and that the corporations wouldn't have to take any responsibility for their actions.
Yeah, that is. Here's a couple facts. David, you're absolutely right. When Ronald Reagan took the White House in 1980, the U.S. deficit was $900 billion. When he left, it was $2.7 trillion. Donald Trump added $8 trillion to the U.S. deficit. What's the commonality between those two? Not only were they each in their respective times the presidents who single-handedly increased the U.S. deficit the most, they did it because they handed out tax breaks to the wealthy and corporations. Don't take my word for it. Let's listen to Nikki Haley.
But these are the same political elite who've spent like drunken sailors, they've raided Social Security, and they continue to waste taxpayer dollars. Everybody talks about the economy when Trump was president. He put us $8 trillion in debt in just... Four years.
Boom. There it is. Who gets the benefit of those tax breaks? The most wealthy and corporations. And believe you me, trickle-down economics was as much of a lie in 1980 as it is today. Mark from the SAC, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Yeah, thanks so much, Maggie. And to the sister author that called earlier that was wondering about with all the evils loosed upon the world, that always reminds me of the story of Pandora's box, where she had loosed all the evils, but then still hope still remained. I mean, and that's what we got to hold on to. That, and perhaps I'd understand Donald Trump better if I snorted a few lines of Adderall and I could, make sense of all the incoherencies that he, spews out on a constant basis, because I can't find any cohesive thought, in what he says. I mean,
no kidding, Mark. I've come up with a new one for him. The dementiatic, dumbfounded, delirious dictator, day one, Donald. Dementiatic, dumbfounded, delirious dictator on day one, Donald. He's like Fat Elvis. Same shtick, different day, and it ain't getting any better. But I'm here to give you hope. And so we're going to end with hope today. And this isn't hope from my take. Karl Rove was talking about this. So if you know Karl Rove is the master messenger of the GOP, the architect of our current demise. Here's what. Nikki Haley took down a quarter of the vote in North Carolina, a quarter of the vote in Maine, 33% of the vote in Massachusetts, 48% of the vote in Vermont, 43% of the vote in Virginia. She pulled off the upset in Vermont. When Ted Kennedy ran against Jimmy Carter in 1980, he basically wounded Jimmy Carter, even though everybody knew Jimmy Carter was going to be the Democratic nominee for president. And Jimmy Carter lost that year to Ronald Reagan. Why is this hope? This is hope because all of those people who voted for Nikki Haley are gettable votes. And if Joe Biden can get even some proportion of those, 25% in North Carolina, 25% in Maine, 33% in Massachusetts, 48%+ in Vermont, 43% in Virginia, Joe Biden wins. There are people that don't believe in the MAGA baloney, that don't believe in the dementiatic, delirious, dumbfounded dictator day one, Donald. We can do better, America, and we will. Adam Schiff will be the next senator from the state of California. That is a win. Colin Allred is going to take on Ted Cruz for the Senate seat in Texas. He's Ted Cruz's worst nightmare. And the Maryland Senate seat is up for grabs. This is a doable election, folks. Hope does spring eternal, and it is spring in the United States. Donald Trump is crumbling. He is delirious, and we are here to win. Get off your butts and vote. That is my hope. Only through your vote will we defeat this dictator day one. I'm Maggie Dawn. That wraps it up today. I'll be back with more tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss it here on the Maggie Dawn Show. My thanks to Dr. Kowalik, Supervisor Steve Taylor, and of course Bruce Murphy from UrbanMilwaukee.com. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. And always remember, it's better when we stand together.
just one burning to flame.